IBEC, the voice of Irish business.
Welcome to IBEC Voices, a podcast series about the people and priorities behind Irish business and the global climate that shapes it. Our mini-series with a focus on COP26 continues with the conclusion of the discussion between Dr. Neil Walker, Head of Infrastructure, Energy and Environment at IBEC, and Stefan Engling, Advisor on EU Climate Policy at Business Europe. They discuss some of the technical aspects of Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, and Stefan reflects on how the business community can make its voice heard during the negotiations between parties and what added value it can bring to the negotiations.
One of the things I've heard about is on cooperative mechanisms that we need to have a review of Article 6. Would you just like to say a few words about this?
Yes, indeed. As Business Europe, we have identified Article 6 as basically one of the most concrete outcomes that we would like to see from the negotiations in Glasgow. The issue has been open since Paris, basically, and is one of the last elements of the so-called Paris rulebook, which would really make for a comprehensive set of international climate policies. What Article 6 mechanisms allow us to do is basically have the investment in mitigation, so in emissions reductions, in those places and economies where they are most efficient. And we have several varieties of this under Article 6. We have Article 6.2, which is bilateral partnerships where countries remunerate or compensate each other on a bilateral basis for taking on extra mitigation ambition, in return, the mitigation of another party can be reduced. We have Article 6.4, where we don't have an existing mechanism yet, which would be a sort of a centralized marketplace for this kind of ambition trading between countries. And then we have Article 6.8, which has seen a lot of retention recently, especially in the first few days at the COP. And I just came out of sort of a technical negotiation session. Article 6.8 deals with so-called non-market approaches, which are basically efforts such as technology sharing, technology transfer, capacity building in developing countries. The discussions that we have been hearing in the early days of the COP, for example, have been on Article 6.8. There will probably a so-called work program be adopted on 6.8, meaning that the outlines of an agreement or the outlines of what should be in an agreement will probably be there, but then this will be given for further negotiations after the conference by technical experts. On the other parts of Article 6, we see with especially 6.4, the centralized mechanism, and 6.2, some outstanding political issues, which will likely only be solved when sort of the technical experts that are in charge this week hand over everything that they could not resolve to the political decision makers and ministers next week. Some of these issues that will probably enduring and be with us until next week at least, and then hopefully be resolved so we don't have to deal with them for another 6 to 7 years, are the issues of corresponding adjustments on Article 6.4. There is pretty wide agreement that you need to have these adjustments, meaning exactly that if a country is engaged in taking on extra ambition from another country, this needs to be reflected in both countries' nationally determined contributions, NDCs, so that we don't have double counting. And double counting meaning that we have the same emission reductions covered under either two NDCs, which would be what the experts call double claiming or double claimants. And we also don't have double issuance, which means that the same emission reduction is covered by two different cooperation mechanisms. So there's a lot of technical detail there to be resolved on corresponding adjustments. And the big discussion that is ongoing and that will likely be ongoing is to what extent do our corresponding adjustments also needed for bilateral agreements? So the agreements under Article 6.2. And to what extent do they need to kick in as well if the exchanged mitigation objectives fall outside of the NDCs, of the scope of the NDCs, and to what extent should that even be allowed? So a lot of technical issue to be resolved there. The last point on Article 6 that will probably be negotiated until at least next week, because this is of such a political importance, particularly for certain parties, is the issue of carryover. There was already a similar mechanism to Article 6 mechanism cooperative approaches in the Kyoto Protocol, the so-called clean development mechanism. And there were quite a lot of problems with that mechanism in terms of how to what extent the credits that were issued under the mechanism actually represented real emissions reductions. So the environmental integrity at least was questioned by many parties. And Brazil in particular still has claims to have earned a lot of credits under that system and is pushing, of course, for these credits to be transferred into something usable in the new system as well, which is understandable. But there are, of course, other groups such as the EU that are pushing against this, citing environmental integrity concerns. As Business Europe, we are pushing for an ambitious agreement on hopefully all Article 6 elements. If there is further technical work to be done, for example, on Article 6.8, that is maybe to be expected and unavoidable. But in general, we would really like to see some comprehensive agreement on Article 6 at Glasgow, finally. Because, as I said, it just delivers a lot of efficiency gains. The climate transition is going to be very challenging as it is for all economies. But if we can invest at those places where sort of the quickest and easiest wins can be made, that will be much to the advantage of all involved. At the same time, of course, we are keenly aware of the need for environmental integrity of these systems, and as I said, are pushing for systems that absolutely rule out double counting and that can be regarded as trustworthy by all parties.
So indeed, the phrase, the devil is in the detail. Article 6 agreed in 2015, and we spent 6 years trying to understand what it is that we've agreed. In conclusion, Stefan, I was wondering, how do we make sure that business voices are heard in the negotiations, given that we're not directly involved in the closed room discussions, and given the very challenging conditions due to COVID and the sheer multitude of interested stakeholders? And in particular, what added value can business organizations specifically bring indirectly into negotiations such as the COP?
Yes, that's indeed one of the main challenges we're dealing with. The party delegates who are in Glasgow will hear from basically everyone and arguments going into every direction. So how can we make sure that business is heard and that our concerns are being taken into account? Here, I think coordination is key. As Business Europe, of course, we had a coordination process in the run-up to COP amongst our own membership, including IBEC, in which we agreed on the key messages that Business Europe is carrying forward to Glasgow. But of course, we are also part of bigger groupings where we try to really have a comprehensive input by speaking with one voice, which is particularly important for the Glasgow negotiations because of the COVID restrictions. Business Europe is active in the In the Observer constituency for business and industry NGOs, the so-called Bingo, which is a name that should not be taken as too descriptively, but we are very involved in these. We have our delegates being part of Bingo coordination meetings that happen almost daily during the 2 weeks of the COP, where we just, because not everybody can be in all of the negotiations, and especially with the COVID restrictions, originally there was a rule in place, for example, that because of the social distancing requirements, only one observer from each grouping, so one observer from, I don't know, the many thousand business stakeholders that are grouped together under Bingo, could be in the room on each negotiation session. So we really need to make sure that we have a good exchange of information and that we are clear on the messages we want to portray. Beyond that, Business Europe is also part of the so-called Major Economies Business Forum, which has been coordinating in the run-up to the COP as well, and will also publish some papers on the key issues that are at stake in Glasgow in the next few days. How do we do it? By trying to coordinate as much as possible, by bundling the limited resources that business has for this, and by speaking with one voice. Why do we do it? What is the added benefit of business in business insight in these discussions? First of all, I think it's good to have practitioners in the room, because in the end, many of these carbon reduction policies will have to be implemented by business, if not most of them. So it's good to have a business perspective on the sense of how enormous the challenge really is, the investment that are needed for achieving climate neutrality by mid-century, and also to give a good input on what the social and economic consequences of these policies might be. We do that on the European level, of course, but especially also at the UNFCCC. We are, as Business Europe, recognized also as a social partner in the European Union, meaning that we are in dialogue also with the trade unions. And we are also making policymakers aware of what the various climate policies, be they on a European level in the Fit for 55 package or the Green Deal, or be they the agreements that are made on an international level, what they actually mean for employers and employees in practice. And then maybe as sort of two last quick points on this, not only will business have to implement whatever policies come out of these agreements, business is also to a large extent responsible for the innovation and the technology breakthroughs that we have already seen, if we look at renewable energy, for example. But it will also have to make much more of the gains that we still need to see in future. I think of clean manufacturing, the use of hydrogen, carbon capture, to the extent that will be necessary in certain hard-to-abate sectors. All these breakthrough technologies need business cases, and therefore political decision makers need insights on how to create the framework conditions to bring these various innovations to market. That's the voice we can add to the discussion. And then lastly, we need to make sure that the arrangements that are made are actually workable. I just spoke in great detail on the sort of technical challenges that we are facing in Article 6 negotiations, for example. If we have a robust and workable and more or less easy to apply framework on Article 6, this actually opens up a lot of potential for the private sector, because if you can invest for emission reduction in those areas that are easiest to achieve, that are potentially also the most attractive investment projects. So there is a lot of potential there. But as you heard, there were a lot of ifs at the beginning of that sentence. And we need indeed have to have a framework that in the end can be understood by the private sector and that does not put too much of an administrative burden of the parties participating. So to sum up, give a sense of the challenge, a sense of the consequences, foster the innovation that is needed, and keep whatever agreements are made workable for the private sector.
Thanks, Stefan. I think that the challenges are considerable, but the stakes are so high that we have to press on. This has to be made to work. You've been extremely generous with your time. I'd like to thank you for the insights that you've been providing. I think the issue of Article 6 deserves to be a podcast in its own right. And I just like to say I'm looking forward to meeting with the other Bingo delegates, including those from Business Europe, in Glasgow over the course of next week. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.